ESPN College Football Podcast.
Hey, everybody. This is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Wednesday, July 6th, 2022. Hope you had a great 4th of July in this great country and that you enjoyed your fireworks. We will be talking about some of the conference realignment fireworks here today. Matt Schick, along with Tom Luganville and Tom Van Haren, the Toms. Lukes, how are we doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. I am in Lincoln, Nebraska, visiting family. You would think it's a vacation spot, but it is, but also visiting family here at TVH. How are you?
I'm doing well. You mentioned the fireworks. If we have time, I'm curious your thoughts on fireworks. As a dad, it's different, right? If you're setting off your own fireworks, I get a little bit nervous. I have to Google and look up what's going to happen with the fireworks so I don't blow my family up.
So here's the thing. See, I'm of the belief that people are, all right, there are families that play cards and families that don't play cards and you're grown up. And then there's families that do fireworks and don't do fireworks when you're growing up. There's like no gray area. Right. Like I grew up in the family, you do not touch fireworks. You do not go anywhere near them. You don't hold them. If somebody's doing them, you tell them that you're not comfortable and you want to go somewhere else. Like that's how I came up, right? And so like, and I'm cool with fireworks and this and that, but I am extremely diligent. Like even around, I mean, my kids are teenagers now, but I'm like, no, nobody needs to be doing any of this stuff. I mean, we don't need a Jason Pierre Paul ourselves.
That's right. And you're doing the hand gestures. You've got all 10 fingers.
I got all 10 so far. And that's probably because of my upbringing. Hey, by the way, talking about you're in Lincoln, Nebraska. I just flew in on a red eye from Maui and I wasn't there for vacation.
That's basically the same thing, right?
Maui, Lincoln, potato, yeah. Potato. Potato, yeah, they're exactly. Very I mean, interchangeable.
If you ranked the destination sites, I mean, you're talking top three. I don't know what order you'd put them in.
Yeah. Basically well, interchangeable.
Look, yeah. Maybe Hawaii will be a Big Ten rival of Nebraska eventually. You just never really know when it comes to the tectonic plates of conference realignment. Yes, I am in Lincoln, Nebraska, home of UCLA's newest rival. You know, it just sounds weird.
They've played each other for 35 years, though.
They have continuously.
Yeah.
There have been some games between these two programs. But let's start right there, guys. And I know that Heather Dinich and Adam Rittenberg did a good emergency pod here for the ESPN College Football Podcast when the news broke. And now that the dust has settled a little bit, or at least we've had about a week to think about this, What kind of goes through your mind, Lugs, about the Big Ten taking on USC and UCLA as those two schools enter the portal and are set to transfer to the Big Ten in 2024?
I think we've just scratched the surface. We've lit a fuse. This is the first big domino to fall. Now what you've got is you've got the power brokers at some of the higher-end programs in the ACC starting to jockey for position. You know, get a sense of where they could fit in the grand scheme of things. You've got the X factor in Notre Dame, which obviously all eyes are on the Irish right now. But you know, what's interesting is, and I don't know how you feel about this, Tom, but this is all about revenue. This is all about money and the ability to bring in greater shares of revenue. And it's no different than what we're seeing happening in the transfer portal or what we're seeing happen in name, image, and likeness. It's where can I create the greatest safe haven financially to grow and expand and not get left behind? And I know that we've had recruiting conversations about how with name, image, and likeness, no two programs are created alike. Not everybody shares the same level of resources. Well, when you look at conference realignment, that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about ultimately being and potentially two Power Five conferences, and then the music's going to stop and there's going to be a bunch of people left without a chair because financially they can't compete.
Yeah, that was my first thought was the Big Ten was smart to protect themselves. They're not sure. Going to let themselves fall behind because I agree. I think we actually talked about this on one of the podcasts before with all three of us that, you know, Gene Smith and some other ADs have publicly been saying they think that maybe the NCAA or the Power Five teams break off from the NCAA. And I kind of feel like, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I kind of feel like this is maybe some of the first dominoes for that to happen, that these super conferences are going to join. They're all aligned. And then they start talking about, okay, do we really need the NCAA? Because I don't know if a lot of fans understand that the NCAA doesn't own the college football playoffs. So the Power Five teams right. go break off, take the playoff with them. And then now you're doing what Tom's talking about. You're taking a big moneymaker, a big revenue maker, something that TV programs and companies are interested in. And you can go set your own margins and you can go set your mm-hmm. own profits and create your own rules. So I agree. Everything you said, it's about money. It's about protecting yourself. And it's about the future that I think eventually these teams are going to break off.
Well, real quick, Matt, the other thing I think is interesting about this is we talk about, all right, how do we stay out of court, right? That seems to be the question in every evolving aspect of collegiate athletics right now. All right, how do we not end up in court? Or if we do end up in court, how do we navigate it? Well, when you start talking about grant of rights and where people currently lie in this financial landscape, and now, and we've, the ACC, I think, is already positioning themselves to say, come after us. Because if you're going to tell us that we owe you this by leaving for an opportunity where we could double our revenue share off of what we're making right now or come close to it, and you want us to pay you this, the rules have changed, right? The dynamics changed. And again, let's see if they decide, okay, well, take us to court. Let's go.
Yeah, the grant of rights documents, I saw those online. They were published. Yeah. Someone got a hold of those. And yeah, there are plenty of options, but none of them are clean for some schools to leave behind the grant of rights or inexpensive. Correct. And you'd have to have the other schools sign off on it and excuse you from it. It just doesn't seem like that's going to happen. But you're right. And you started out talking about it, how comparing how, you know, when there was concern that college football was entering the world of free agency, with players being able to transfer to the highest bidder and become mm-hmm. immediately eligible with NIL and the transfer portal. And now the real free agency is happening with entire universities. I mean, right. You've got USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten. You got reports out that the Big 12 is going to be very aggressive in its pursuit of a handful of Pac-12 leftovers like Colorado, my alma mater, yeah. Arizona State, Utah. Perhaps Oregon and Washington, mm-hmm. if they decide to leave. Meanwhile, Notre Dame is still independent, but it's the most coveted program out there in this world. And, you know, it's funny, like the NCAA is kind of painted as the bad guy. Like, hey, now we can be without the NCAA. Maybe they can govern. We can govern ourselves. Well, that's what they're already doing. They're creating their own structure. They're creating their own conferences. And that's where we're headed. I'm not a big defender of the NCAA here, yeah. but the NCAA is not negatively impacting the sport like this realignment is right now.
Well, and think about it in these terms. You look at USC and UCLA right now. Can you blame them for doing what they're doing? They're making $19 million in the Pac-12. $19 million. I hate to say that's measly. That's measly in the grand scheme of things when you're talking about Big Ten revenue sharing, SEC revenue sharing. And to your point, Matt and Tom, the Big 12 is just trying to hang on by the thinnest of threads. They need Colorado, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, potentially Oregon and Washington. They need those people to join their club.
Maybe. See, I would say the Big 12 is in a much better position than the Pac-12, which I never thought I would say.
Yeah,
but the Big 12 doing what they did last year, they're going to have 12 teams eventually. But then, you know, if you're adding some Pac-12 teams, you're up to 16. Adding BYU, adding Houston, adding UCF, you know,
but
those kind of pro.
Teams,
no, I get it. I'm not saying yeah. they're a major conference, but I'm saying right. they're held together. Like there is something there that's not going to go away.
Tom. Yeah.
Yeah. I still think that we're headed towards the super conference thing. So I don't know that any of this really matters, because if you consolidate some of the smaller Pac-12 schools with the Big 12, is that going to be sustainable for if let's say the Big Ten adds Oregon, Stanford, Notre Dame, the SEC goes and poaches a couple other big schools. How is that going to be sustainable for the smaller schools to compete with the
big schools? It's not.
Right. So I think that all of that stuff that might happen and the changes that might happen, I don't know that it matters in the grand scheme of things for the final result of what we're going to see, because those two super conferences or whatever builds with the Big Ten, SEC and ACC, it's just going to drown everything out. Everything else around it, it's going to swallow it up.
Well, it's interesting because we talk about the Big 12 and Matt, what you talked about, what they've done so far to survive. Okay, they've added a group of five teams. All right. So if we go towards the super conferences, and let's just say we're looking at two, like Tom just suggested, and you're going to have essentially every power player involved in one of those two conferences, then does everybody else kind of become, and I'm using the air quotes here, the new American conference, where like everybody that can't afford to live in that space, Oregon State, right? Kansas State, Kansas, everybody
Iowa,
that's currently
Iowa State.
In the,
yes.
Iowa State, all of these teams, do they all just become one big, gigantic American Athletic Conference where you look at them and unfortunately it's just a smidge above or below the level that those other two would be playing at? Because essentially that's what we're going to end up with, the haves and the have-nots.
But and the cynical part of me says, but that's how it's always been.
Sure.
The difference is there has been an illusion that other programs can compete because you're in the same conference as a Georgia and an Alabama, or you're in the same conference as a USC and Oregon and a Washington, or in the same conference as an Oklahoma and Texas. You were just in the same neighborhood, but they had an in-ground pool and you had a trailer park. Like, I mean, you're in the same neighborhood, in the same zip code, but you're dealing with completely different finances.
I've talked to some coaches about this, and the conclusion that I've come to, if I'm a coach at a MAC school or the schools that you guys are mentioning, the lower Power Five schools that really don't ever compete, if I'm one of those coaches, I'm advocating for the bigger Power Five teams to break off and us to have our own thing, because we have no shot at a championship.
None.
What are my kids playing for if I'm the coach at a MAC school when we're in the FBS? But we've got nothing to play for outside of a bowl game that's sponsored by some random company.
Group of five CFP.
Right. 100%. Yes. That's exactly what they should do.
Yeah. Make it a higher level version of the FCS playoffs.
Yep.
Right.
And everyone would watch that.
Of course they would. Of course they would. Because think about it. You're going to get your high profile Boise's. You're going to get your high profile Fresno's. All right, you're going to get your high-profile Louisianas and App States, right? The Coastal Carolinas. Everybody loves tuning in. San Diego States. Everybody loves tuning in to those programs. I know I do, but that's exactly. So you could have the bowl structure for them and their own college football playoff, and then have the Power Five do their own thing too. And you know what? Is anybody's feelings getting hurt? Television wins. The players win. Right. The coaches win. The programs win.
And I wonder about, though, just going back to my comment about the illusion of being able to compete. Like when you know, the group of five versus, you know, hey, we're just a second tier system. I mean, there's a reason there's a difference between Division One, Division Two, and Division Three. And now you're going to have that within the FBS, which I get it. Like the Power Five is completely different than the group of five. And that's that line of demarcation has been there for a while. But when you start parsing through the Power Five and separating those, I just think of your college football. And I'd like to say this sport had better be careful, but I think that has long since passed. But one of the great things about college football, and you guys have covered this for a long time, is you get the rivalries. You get the regionalization of, hey, this team versus this team, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, Texas, and Texas A&M, which are only getting back together because the money was good enough for one of the programs, both of them eventually, to join up in the SEC. And the whole my conference can beat your conference. Paul Feinbaum wrote that book. Who cares about conference bragging rights now where there are only two major players like the NFC bragging about beating the AFC? Who cares? You're all getting in the Super Bowl, right? So I just... as a college football fan, this super conference stuff, which we knew was coming, I think I'm not saying college football is in a precarious spot, but I am saying the nooks and crannies of the country that love college football, the last thing you want to do is marginalize them for the sake of the top 10 or 15 programs. And I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, but I don't think if you did have these super conferences, I don't think you have to go away with regionalized divisions or whatever you want to call it to still have that rivalry or the nostalgia that you have, whatever attachment you have to a conference. You can still have divisions. And you know, a point that I wanted to make too about what we were talking about before, if you have the group of five or lower power five college football playoff, I don't want to make this sound like it would solve the problem, but we talk about transfers all the time. And this was something that I talked to a coach about. If a MAC school had the opportunity to win a championship, do you think that maybe that keeps a couple players from transferring to a school where they might have a shot at some kind of bigger championship or bigger trophy? It's not going to keep everybody there, but I think if a player at a smaller school has a shot to win something, knows that they can play for something, you might be able to keep some of those guys there. And maybe it helps those smaller schools with the transfer problem that a lot of them are having now too. So I think there are some positives that go along with that. I get what you're saying, Matt, but I think restructuring things, making it more fair, I think it could be a better situation for everyone.
I think one thing that's going to be interesting too, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but the discussions have got to be ongoing. At some point, let's just say the SEC look at Vanderbilt and say, Vandy, it's been a good ride. Academic profiles, just not doing quite enough for us anymore. We don't need you, right? And I'm just, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, well, could the ACC have that same conversation about Duke? Okay. And I'm not picking on anybody here. I'm just saying, what do they actually provide? Are you like my dogs?
I like your dog. I mean, look,
my dogs are very, very Vanderbilt. They're staunch Vandy fans. They love the Demon Deacons out of the ACC. They love the Wildcats in the Big Ten.
But this leads me, though, comments.
Right. So this leads me, though, to what I think is the exact opposite. And that is if the Notre Dame Fighting Irish is a legitimate reality for the Big Ten, then doesn't Stanford fit in perfectly to the Big Ten? Mm-hmm. Doesn't Stanford and their whole mode of operation and how they play and their style of play and the fact that they're familiar with SC and UCLA and, you know, you could have them. I mean, Stanford pitted against Michigan, right? Stanford pitted against Penn State. Like, if I'm looking at that and I'm Kevin Warren, I'm going, if we could get Notre Dame and Stanford, we could tell Oregon and Washington to kick rocks. We don't really need them, right? And so I'm interested to see when it's all said and done, because there's all this talk about Washington, there's all this talk about Oregon, all right? But there's no talk about Stanford. And I find that interesting because I think there's a really nice fit there with the Big Ten.
Stanford's got to be on the list. Stanford's got to be on the short list for the Big Ten. Oh. I mean, pair them with Northwestern. You know, you got
well, you have a rivalry with Notre Dame already. If you have them with Notre Dame.
To me, there's a lot of this positioning that it's good for the Big Ten and the byproduct of luring Notre Dame. You know, whether it's, hey, your schedule is coast to coast, but look, you got rivalries with half of our teams anyway. You want to play Michigan State. You want to play Michigan. You play Purdue. You know, you just played them last year. USC. You can play UCLA. Like, you can play in these different environments and different coast to coast and not have to worry about the scheduling hangup.
And I think with all this realignment stuff, what we were talking about in the beginning about not being left behind, I think the Big Ten right now has more leverage on Notre Dame than they have in a long time. That they can play that card, that everybody's gonna line up, everybody's gonna group up, and you're gonna be independent, and you're not gonna be part of this deal that we're gonna get major TV rights, adding Stanford, adding USC, adding maybe Oregon or whoever gets involved. They can throw that at Notre Dame now and say, jump on board, and you're gonna make more money than you will being independent, and you're going to be protected within this conference, and you're not going to be left behind. And I think that's important too.
They got a few more years left on that NBC deal, I think 2025 or 26, whatever that is with NBC and Notre Dame. I still have serious doubts about Notre Dame deciding to join a conference.
They make more than half of the Big Ten teams right now.
They don't need it now, unless it's like, you know, a $30 to $50 million windfall that you're handing over and forfeiting because of that, then you have that issue. But if you have access to the playoff, if your recruiting is still awesome, I mean, Marcus Freeman, you guys know, is just hitting the ground running right now, right? A top 10, top five nationally right now. and you still have that independent notion of there. It still makes you feel unique, which Notre Dame is. There's a reason they're the most coveted brand in college football to join a league. So, Tom, Van Herren, do you think Notre Dame at the end of this joins a league? Because I don't.
I mean, at the end of this, I tend to lean towards yeah, because I think everything's changing so fast. I think everything's changing. It's just so the landscape is so much different than it ever has been. Everything you just said is true, but if you look at what could happen of what we were just talking about with these super conferences and you know the TV deals, how they're worked out now, yeah, Notre Dame makes more, but if you're aligned with if the conferences expand and you've got two giant conferences, you've got opportunity to make more money now than you did before. And does that factor in? You know, like we talked about before with the potentially their own playoff system, if they break off and do their own thing, do you want to get left out of that? I think the potential for change around the entire landscape of college football, if we're talking about the end and what could happen, I would lean towards yes. I think they eventually need to team up with somebody, line up with somebody, maybe not just for the money, but just to be aligned and not be left behind.
Where Notre Dame has an advantage, though, is they get to play the slow game. They can control the path, and they can be lured, and they can push back, and they can be lured, and they can push back, and they can let the sing drown out, and nobody's going to tell them no. That's the thing at the end of the day.
There's no reason to make a lifetime decision tomorrow when you know you can make it at any time. And that's where Notre Dame is at right now. Before we move on, big news over here at ESPN Podcast. ESPN has partnered with Peyton Manning's Omaha production to create a bunch of new shows. One of those shows is Always College Football with ESPN college football analyst Greg McElroy. Every week, McElroy is taking a deep dive into the sport with the biggest names on and off the field. With off seasons being a thing of the past, McElroy goes year-round with analysis, opinions, and insight on top teams and under-the-radar stories from coast to coast. That's Always College Football. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Let's get to this. Do you think fans care that it's good for the university but bad for rivalries or long story thing? Like, hey, USC, you're joining the Big Ten. This is great for our school. We can get out of the red and into the black financially, but we're going to West Lafayette for games. We're going to Piscataway for games. Like, do we, like, as media folks, we always like, yeah, that's good for the Big Ten. That's really good. But is it good for the school? Is it good for the fans? I feel like the fans are like 3rd, 4th, 5th, maybe.
It's good for the fans at home.
On the list, the fans at home. Yeah, the fans that are watching games. Attendance is a big issue. And now we're talking about Olympic sports having to travel cross country for games.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just a the Texas and Oklahoma story last year came up during Big Ten media days, and I was in Indianapolis for that. My knee jerk was, well, okay, you either got to get Notre Dame or USC and UCLA. And you quickly cross off USC and UCLA in my mind because it didn't make sense geographically. You're just not going to do that. I forgot about West Virginia and the Big 12. We don't care about geography anymore. But I would like these schools to stop giving the statements of this is going to be great for our student athletes. I avoid cross country trips as often as I can. If they say you want to call a game in California or Texas, give me Texas. I'm not going the entire way across the country. And so this whole thing about, just be honest about why we're doing this. It's financial security for your university, for your programs, which might filter down into your other programs that you have in your Olympic sports. But man, I just don't know that the fans care as much about this revenue aspect as these universities do, and these universities have to.
How about this, guys? And I think it gets glossed over because we talk so much about, is it good for the conference or is it good for this respective school? But let's call this what this is. When was the last time USC and UCLA were legitimately relevant as a top 10 nationally ranked consistent program that was winning their conference and going to the college football playoff? Because remember, there's been two teams out of the Pac-12 that have done that so far, and both of them are still in the Pac-12. All right. So now you just took UCLA and USC, and the path just got a whole hell of a lot more difficult. right? Because you're going into a you're going into a line of scrimmage league now. And all that criticism that Lincoln Riley's been taking as to why he left Oklahoma to go to USC, you know, you could kind of see the whole transition to the SEC, knew he didn't have those front type of players, maybe unsure that they'd be able to compete and get those types of guys. How are you supposed to win the SEC West if we assume they're in the SEC West? Well, he essentially now is at USC, and they've just gone into what has become a really, really good line of scrimmage league. I would say second only to the SEC. Oh, and by the way, where do you go to Madison, Wisconsin in the third week of November and it's 21 degrees? Where do you go up into East Lansing? Where do you go to Minnesota and it's minus 13 and you're UCLA? Like, I think that whole structure has shifted for them in a big, big way, because for two programs that haven't dominated the Pac-12, and I know they're flashy and high profile, they just went into a conference with a much more difficult path to get to where they want to get to.
It's a great point. Yes, it helps your university and your bottom line in numbers, in finances.
Yes.
But is it going to help you in your bottom line of wins and losses?
Yes, exactly. And
John Canzano, who's covered Oregon for a long time, he had this thing where he said just the other day, he said, I spoke with Bill Moos, right, who was the former Washington State AD, former Oregon AD, former Nebraska AD, who when they were in the Big Ten, he hired Scott Frost. He was like, hey, look out, baby, here we come. And then he quickly realized, coming from the Pac-12, this is different. And he expects USC and UCLA to get a wake-up call. He said, quote, those are big stadiums, big traditions, lots of championships. There will be great competition, but it's hard for me to see that there's going to be a lot of 10-win seasons, probably going to be more like 7 or 8 wins. And that's a guy who saw it firsthand there at Nebraska.
And in recruiting, Tom, one of your favorite things to talk about is recruiting guys up front and the lack of offensive and defensive linemen.
There's no guys,
right?
Great point.
And I don't think, and I don't know how you guys feel. I don't know how you feel about this, but I don't think this really opens anything up in the Midwest for USC or UCLA.
I wanted to ask you about that. Like, does this help helps the Big Ten in those schools to recruit California more than it does USC and UCLA?
It helps USC more than UCLA though, because I think they've always been more of a national brand recruiter.
Right.
But yeah, man, I mean, that's those other teams now go into California and they get to tell the mommies and daddies, you're going to get to see your kid play a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've talked about Oklahoma's defense with Alex Grinch, and now that's going to be USC's defense and how there's been struggles there. We know the offense is potent, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting if Michigan can have the success in the ground game that they've had going forward. Right. They're getting better at quarterback. You have to think that Penn State's going to get better offensively. They've had some really good recruiting classes. They've added some good quarterbacks. Ohio State, I mean, they're rolling. They bring in new receivers every single year. The offenses are going to be pretty potent, and they're going to be, like Tom said, they're going to be a lot different than what they're used to. So, you know, I'm less concerned about USC just because of what Lincoln Riley has brought in, what he's brought in the transfer portal and recruiting. But I still do think there are some questions and there's some concerns there. But I also think, though, that the profile of Lincoln Riley helps everything, right? And initially, the conversation, the perception for recruits or fans, the perception of what this is now. I mean, I was thinking the other day about just hyping up a game with Ryan Day in Ohio State against Lincoln Riley in USC. I mean, that's going to be a fun game if that happens.
Right? Oh, yeah. No doubt. Big time. I mean, big time.
The point you made about the line of scrimmage league, I remember when we did our National Signing Day coverage on ESPN, and I did – we had research. And I
Yeah, we do the numbers.
Yeah, and I went to you guys, and I said, hey, what do you think of this idea? And you guys are giving me, hey – look for this, look for that. So we had research look up, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was about line of scrimmage, day one NFL draft picks, or rounds 1 through 3 from the line of scrimmage, defensive line, offensive line, out of the Pac-12. And the numbers were scarce. They were like dead last. And now you're going into line of scrimmage league like the Big Ten. What does that mean for you moving forward? And it begs the question of, like, realignment has been programs chasing the money because and security and stabilizing, right? They need that stability. Nebraska did that. They didn't like the Longhorn Network. They thought it was coming apart. That was when we thought four Big 12 teams were headed to the Pac-12, right? We didn't know, or Pac-10. We didn't know at the time. But you go down the list of programs that have been involved in realignment over the last 10 years, it might help your bottom line financially, like we said, but has it really helped these programs? Like Nebraska, Texas A&M, I think their profile has increased. Their recruiting.
Have they come close to sniffing Atlanta one time? Yes, 2012. It's the only time.
With Manziel, yeah.
That's the only time.
Missouri started out great. You know, made it to the SEC championship game in back-to-back years. You look at Colorado, my alma mater. It's a bad time to be a bad program, right? That's not in the Big Ten or SEC. Utah, I think, is one of the outliers.
Utah,
right?
And TCU both flourished. Yeah. They both flourished, but it didn't happen overnight. Now, you and I have talked about those records multiple times. Because it took time to develop and build that Power Five level caliber of player. And obviously now you got it. I think, you know, you're talking about the ability to go into the Midwest if you are an SC or UCLA. So let's just take, I'm sorry, it's slipping my mind right now. The name of the defensive lineman that was at Purdue the last couple of years just got taken.
George Karlaftis.
George Karlaftis. Outside of Kayvon Thibodeau, could you name a player comparable to George Karlaftis in the Pac-12 right now? And he's on a 7-5, 8-14 right. in the Big Ten. Okay. So my question then is, if you're USC, and again, a lot of this sales pitch is going to be, all right, we're going to have road games all throughout the Midwest. And if there's a George Karlaftis getting recruited by everybody, is SC going to have an advantage with the Southern California sun and the palm trees and the NIL opportunities to be able to allure a guy out, a top-tier guy up front, a front guy, out west, knowing that on 6 or 7 possible occasions, he will be playing a game that will be within driving distance of his family.
Right. Why win 7, 8, or 9 games out west with those flights if I can do it here in my backyard? Right.
Bingo.
And you're going to have to deal with, if it's a really high-profile kid, you're going to, again, I go back to Ohio State, you're going to have to deal with Ohio State, who has had a ton of success up front,
and
developing players, and they're going to have that pitch that you don't need to go out there. You can stay in the Midwest and get drafted here.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is USC and UCLA? What is their story 10 years from now from realignment? Is it more like a Nebraska or a Colorado, or is it more like a Utah and a TCU? And the difference with USC and UCLA is they just haven't had much success over the last 5, 6 years. Like, it just hasn't happened. They've kind of fallen off a little bit.
We have two variables, though, that could alter that TCU and Utah and all the other movement did not have, and that's the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quick fixes. Quick fixes for programs.
Band-aids.
NIL.
And we should probably preface that conversation with, we're talking mainly about recruits up front, because California, for Lincoln Riley's offense, he's got
skill guys are everywhere.
Skill everywhere, right.
The Big Ten deal coming up could be worth more than $1 billion, $100 million per school, perhaps. You've got the Pac-12 that recently said, hey, we are going to now open up our media rights conversations right now to try and get ahead of this thing, get some T's dotted and some ink to dry before the tectonic plates of realignment have even settled here. You guys mentioned it. What college football looks like now, I'm not sure 10 years ago I could have forecasted this at all, because I thought these programs were more immovable. Like, you're not going to do that. Oh, because if you do this, then this happens. But now here we are with what looks to be two super conferences. We'll see what the Big 12 decides to do. ACC. I mean, shoot, what happens with Florida State, Clemson, right? What happens with those programs moving forward? But what does this sport look like here in 5 years? What does it look like in 10 years? Because not only have we seen realignment, but we've seen NIL, transfer portal, like, July 1st was the 1-year anniversary of NIL. And it was also about the one-year anniversary of the Texas-Oklahoma thing, and now we've got USC and UCLA. What does this sport look like in 10 years, and is it in any danger?
Yeah, I mean, I just keep going back to what we were talking about before, that I really think just talking to coaches, talking to people, hearing now out loud from athletic directors, I just think this is all moving towards at least the Power Five or some of the Power Five eventually breaking off and doing their own thing. Because there, I have, and Tom, I don't know if you can agree with this or you've heard this too, but I've heard more complaints from personnel directors, from coaches, just about the entire state of everything within college football than I ever have in my life.
It's they're pulling their hair out. It's a disaster. Right.
And there's nothing being done about it. I think that's going to be a big driving force of all of this, that we're already moving in this direction. Why don't we take it over and create what we want and make our lives better, make our jobs better? And I think that we're all headed towards one big breakoff, one big division, and they take the college football playoff with them and they go do their own thing. I think I've said this 100 times, but I've heard people say, let's just go break off. Let's let Mac Brown be the commissioner and let's call it a day. And let's just run it how we want. And I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah. I think the further we go down this path, if we don't get the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness under control, and let's just say we assume that going forward, we're going to see minimal to no changes to how it is right now, then those haves are going to be fewer and fewer and fewer, because there's only going to be so many of those programs that can afford to live in that space. If we get that somewhat under wraps, then I think it's going to be, I guess you could say, for lack of a better phrase, more affordable for everybody to maybe have more programs living in that space. So it's hard to give a direct answer to where we see this is going. But I do think we are continuing to separate the haves and the have-nots, widening the gap between them. And this is, again, going to be about, you know, revenue sharing, revenue generation, television rights, everybody just trying to survive. Because, listen, I mean, you touched on this, Matt. Okay, let's just say an SC and a UCLA, they're now going to be getting a much bigger cut than they were ever getting before, but all of their Olympic or non-revenue producing sports are now going to have to travel further, travel more often. Everything becomes more expensive. So you're getting a bigger cut, but you're paying more for the rest of your programs too. So that ends up playing a role as well on the bottom line.
It's going to be really interesting to watch this. It certainly is. As we head down the pike here toward the start of the college football season again, Media Days is just a couple of weeks away. Can't believe it. But we are at the stage where we've gone down the alphabet, the ABCs of college football, as we continue to march through the offseason, marking our progress, going through the ABCs of college football. Today's episode brought to you by the letter T, which means Z is just, a few episodes away here.
Is that why the Toms are on?
It makes perfect sense.
We're giving somebody way too much credit.
That's right. And so we've got that. So give me something. It could be a program that starts with T, or anything that you want to opine on that starts with the letter T, as we sign off here on the ESPN College Football Podcast. But what strikes your fancy here? Tom Van Herren, I'll start with you.
Well, we touched on Texas A&M, and I think that, to me, heading into this season is such an interesting program. The offseason that Jimbo has had, getting in a very, very public spat with Nick Saban, the NIL stuff. I think Jimbo's got a lot of eyes on him and a microscope on him. Tom, you touched on it. There hasn't really been a lot of success yet on the field, and we need to see it. And they've recruited really, really well, this past class especially along the defensive line. They've added some really, really big names. And a lot of those recruits, I know, Tom, you've talked to some of them too, and a lot of those recruits that they signed, their expectations are really high, and they want to win, and they want to win at the highest level. So I'm interested to see what Texas A&M does this year. They brought in Max Johnson at quarterback. They lost Zach Calzada. They still have Haynes King there. They've lost Isaiah Spiller. Some big names are gone from that team. But like I said, some big names coming in. So I think this is a pivotal year for that program and for Jimbo Fisher.
I'm going to stay in the same state, and I'm going to go T is for Texas, because I think that Quinn Ewers is going to be one of the most fascinating case studies of name, image, and likeness that we have seen to date. Yep. And depending on the result, could have a huge impact on how people operate in the name, image, and likeness space if the reports are true of the money that he's made already without ever attempting a college pass. Yep. Okay. I'm not convinced he's the guy everybody says he is. I know he's physically gifted. I know he's talented. My question is, does he love football? Or does he love name, image, and likeness? Does he want to be a difference maker? Like, does he want to be a Bryce Young? Does he want to be, a Tua? Does he want to be a Caleb Williams? Does he want to be a difference maker? We keep glossing over the fact he has not done anything. The last time he threw a pass, he was a junior in high school. That's big, guys. And we gloss it over and we keep sitting there going, well, Hudson Card has no chance. Okay, maybe he doesn't. Well, Charles Wright, their other true freshman, well, he got no chance. So, okay, well, maybe he doesn't. And Malik Murphy, he's another freshman. Well, maybe he's got a chance. Okay, well, we know the Arch Manning saga that took place over the last, 3 weeks. And the bottom line is, if Quinn Ewers is the guy that everybody says that he is, the problem at Texas is they're not playing with Alabama's guys. They're not playing with Clemson's guys. They're not playing with Ohio State's guys. So how much help is he going to have? I mean, that's another part of it. I understand. Bijan, love it. Love the two wideouts. I think they are below average in the offensive line. Do you know it's been 21 years since the Texas offensive lineman was drafted in the first round?
It's incredible.
How does that happen? Like, that's amazing to me.
Now they've got the pancake factory to solve that.
Yeah, well, they better hope they solve it, because it's going to go one or two ways. They're either going to sign guys that want to pan out and be great players, or they're going to sign guys for the wrong reasons, and they're going to become complacent, non-motivated, and they're not going to perform because you already gave them money.
Could there be more stark recruiting aspects or caliber of athlete, or at least the way that they are viewed and how they conduct themselves, than Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning in the recruiting process with?
Yeah.
And both are going to compete eventually at Texas for the starting job.
Yeah.
If they stay there.
I had somebody ask me, not to get off point here, I know we're going to be wrapping up in a second. I had somebody say, well, do you think he made a mistake? And I said, well, first of all, it's not my place to say that. He's done the homework. He's made the decision. He educated himself on it. My answer is, does it matter? With the transfer portal, he could just leave.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if he made the right choice or the wrong choice. I think we can all sit here and say, okay, if your final three were Texas, Georgia, and Alabama, and you chose the one team that's got the least amount of weapons around you or the pieces of puzzle in place out of those three, okay, then maybe you can question his decision. But does it matter? The answer is no. He can leave. The only guy that ain't leaving without sitting is Quinn.
And
he's already done it.
And if Arch wants to leave, every school in the country is going to be blowing up his phone. He can go anywhere he wants.
No doubt.
Quinn laid out the blueprint for how to get paid without throwing a ball. I mean, it can be done. Let's hope it doesn't backfire. Look, we poke fun. We hope for the best for him. And yeah, we hope that we can see, because the talent is there. And we would love to see it there at Texas on full display. For my letter T, I got a couple. One is, it's time, meaning as you go through these contracts and these, billion-dollar TV deals and all of that, I hope that we can come to some sort of agreement that the student athletes need a cut into this and not just NIL. You are making these decisions for financial reasons. You are asking, hey, USC, UCLA, you're going to fly to Piscataway for this, that, or the other. The student athletes, yes, they use these colleges to help build their brand, but we are talking about so much money here that I would hope that there would be some sort of percentage here, especially with the new college football playoff, and that's going to get expanded. The arms race is just out of control.
It's called a CBA.
And that's where we're going to head.
That's the only way to stay out of court.
It's going to be not scholarships, but contracts. And maybe that's where we're going to head. So that'll be one of the more interesting things. And to your Texas point, Texas and USC are going to be the most interesting case studies with this expansion, with this realignment. Texas going to the SEC. How does that work? And USC going to the Big Ten. How does that work for them moving forward? And I also say, as we get these things going, one of the toughest things to explain to my kids is going to be why they name these conferences these certain ways. I think we can all agree it was foolish to use numbers. Okay. That was terrible foresight for these people who created these conferences. We went from the Big Eight to the Big 12 and the
Big 10, the Big 14.
The Big 10, like it remained the Big 12, but they had 10 teams for the last 10 years. It's going to be 14 for a couple years. Then it's back to 12, could go to 18.
Nobody can count, Matt. Maybe that's our problem.
The Big 10 went to 11 when Penn State came on board. They got all cute with that logo with the number one in the middle of it for the 10. That was all nice. And then they added three more. Now they're 14, maybe 16 now. In a couple of years, it was the Pac-8, then the Pac-10, then the Pac-12. They're going to lose a couple members. The Southeastern Conference, geographically fine, but Oklahoma, it's not Southeast. I'm not sure I'd go there. Even the Big East tried to add Boise State years ago. Kudos. I think the bottom line, kudos to the American Athletic Conference.
Is it better or worse than naming your divisions legends and leaders?
Or at that time, as I called them, slow and slower. The conference has dramatically improved since then.
Yeah, it has. It has. And the sport continues to change. For Sarah and Taylor, running things behind the glass for us. For Tom Luganville, Tom Van Haren, I'm Matt Schick. What a sport we cover. This is the ESPN College Football Podcast. We'll catch you on the other side.